Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Andrew Baggerly from the Bay Area News Group. But before we talk to Andrew, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Andrew, you have a new book out, Giant Splash. We're going to start with that before we actually talk about the 2015 Giants. Tell us about the book and how's it going with that?
Well, thanks, Joe. And yeah, the last 15 years at AT&T Park, this is, of course, year 16, been a little interesting, a little active. And, you know, before last season, I was thinking it's going to be the 15th year, 2014, at AT&T Park. And you really could just write a book about the ballpark being the main character. And really all the greatest hits sort of we've seen in terms of games, from the setting of a single season and all-time home run record to Matt Cain's perfect game to a couple of no-hitters, and then obviously the three run-ups to the World Series. All three World Series clinched on the road, but three of the four pennants clinched at home, two of them in a walk-off fashion. And, you know, for me, someone I grew up in Chicago as a Cubs fan, they've had 100 years at Wrigley Field. They've never won a World Series. So... All of this has happened in 15 years, and what most people would say, I think, is the most beautiful ballpark in baseball. So I thought, you know what, this would be kind of fun to do sort of a greatest hits of the AT&T Park era. And then Tim Lincecum no-hits the Padres in June, and then even more stuff happens. They make another run to another World Series. So this is sort of a compendium of the 15-year AT&T Park era. It's Giant Splash, and it's out now.
How ironic is it that this ballpark opened up with a three-homer game by Kevin Elster, of all people, not a home run hitter, not a home run ballpark. You know, we don't see that many home runs. We see a lot of triples at this park, but that doesn't take away from how exciting it is to watch games here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when some of the guys would take batting practice and they were sort of studying the wind patterns, et cetera, I remember Rich Aurelia telling me they took BP on a really hot day and the ball was jumping. And, of course, they saw that it's less than 310 feet down the line. Of course, you got to elevate the ball to get it over that wall. But everyone thought that this was going to be a home run park, and it was the park that was built for Barry Bonds and his swing. And, you know, obviously, you look back and just a few years later, 2007, they have the All-Star game here. They had the home run derby, and not one hitter hit a splash home run at all. So it really was a park that only Barry Bonds could hit home runs out of still. And has played much different than maybe they anticipated. But you're right. That first game, Kevin Elster of the Dodgers hits three home runs, and that's the first chapter in the book, is the whole story of how the ballpark was built, how it was financed, why everything is where it is, why the bullpens are where they are, why the wall looks the way it does, etc. But it ends up with the Giants loss. And then chapter two is the famous JT Snow homer off Armando Benitez, which is the first big moment that happened in this ballpark. And the Giants lost that game. Chapter 3 is Bonds setting the single-season home run record. And the Giants lost. So hopefully Giants fans will keep sticking with the book, because I do promise that they do end up winning some of these games that are in this book and in this list.
We'll have more with Andrew Baggerly from the Bay Area News Group right after this. Today's interview is being sponsored by Toscolito Tire and Automotive. You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscolito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at six Bay Area locations near you. Toscolito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide guarantee backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscolito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscolito Tire and Automotive, with four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscolito, more than just a tire store.
One moment I'll never forget. Before the recent run of World Series titles for this club,
2002, when the Giants left this ballpark ahead 3-2 against the Angels, this place was rocking. I mean, everybody thought they were going to win the World Series. And by the way, coming up later this week on this podcast, Tim Worrell will talk more about that World Series. He took the loss in Game 6, so you can imagine what that felt like. But take us back to that year, thinking about that year compared to the way things are now and how Giants fans are maybe a little bit spoiled compared to, you know, being so hungry for it in 02.
Right, and that night that you mentioned, they won Game 5. They scored 16 runs. A lot of people forget that was Jeff Kent's last home game as a Giant, and he hit 2 home runs in that game. It really was a signature game for him. But what we all remember from that game was little Darren Baker toddling out in front of home plate and JT Snow rescuing him. So that certainly was an unforgettable game, and that's in the books. And then obviously it would have been a prelude to the first World Series title in San Francisco until the rally monkey started jumping around and Scott Spezio and everything else that Giants fans don't want to hear about. So, but, you know, it's you look back and now that they've won 3 World Series, you can almost look back at that, and unless you were a player on one of those teams that didn't win a ring during your career, maybe the heartache is eased just a little bit.
Fast forwarding to 2015, and really the talk of the Giants right now is a man who has been a big part of the last 2 championships. That's Hunter Pence. He's back in the lineup. He pretty much introduced himself to the ball club and everybody else by hitting very well the first 2 games. How much do you think they missed him? I mean, do you give this team a lot of credit for hanging around at 500 without him in the lineup?
Well, I do, and not just because of his ability to drive in runs, but also just what he does for the energy level of this group. And, you know, he's out there every day. He never looks tired. Have you ever seen Hunter Pence look tired? I don't know if I have. And I think it's almost like everybody else sees him going at that speed, and it pushes them to go at a little bit of a higher speed as well when maybe it's a time you have to muddle through a little bit. So no question, I think, that they didn't have that inspiration on the field, and they had to fight through a little bit. And especially losing 2/5 of their pitching staff basically on opening day. We found out Jake Peavy wasn't going to start the second game of the season in the hours before the first game of the season. And we also found out that Matt Cain was going to go on the disabled list. So for them to sort of battle through without those 2 guys and Hunter Pence and still be where they are, I think they do have to feel very good about that.
Since you mentioned Peavy, you know, it's interesting when you look at the NFL or even basketball, the intensity level of those sports, you don't think of that in baseball. You think of the even keel. But Hunter Pence brings a different type of intensity. So does Jake Peavy. How does that work on a team like this? Because do you think the balance is helped along by you have those 2 type of players, yet you have a Brandon Crawford, you have a Joe Panik, and a Buster Posey, who I think are the ultimate kind of just even keel. They don't get too high or too low.
Well, and I think the key is that you have personalities. They don't all have to be the same, but I think it helps if they're consistent. You know, we always talk about consistency in baseball. I wrote a blog post about this a couple days ago when Pence came back. The Giants knew what they were getting, but more importantly, they knew who they were getting. And they can kind of rely on him to be the same person, the same, give the same contribution, bring the same sort of energy level every day. Brandon Crawford, I think, brings that sort of steadiness every day. And a lot of those personalities, they don't have to be the same. You can have guys who are quieter and guys who are more energetic, guys who are the clubhouse clowns, etc. And they balance each other. I think they find a way to balance each other after a long season. But it's when you have the guys who really change from day to day, you don't necessarily know who they're going to be, either on the field or off. They can be a little more of a challenge. And I think that's true in almost any workplace environment as well. And maybe that was a frustration that teammates had with Barry Bonds, too, because he could be very charming one day and then not give you the time of day the next. So, I think that this group knows how to navigate their personalities. There's obviously been a lot of, a lot of stability in terms of not only the players but the coaching staff. You know, here you've got front offices where guys have come up from interns and here they're 20 years later. You've got guys in the front office like Bobby Evans, who's now the general manager. And you have a coaching staff with a pitching coach, a bullpen coach that are on their 3rd manager instead of vice versa. I think that stability really helps as well.
More with Andy Baggerly after this. Giants fans are settling for nothing but the best these days, so if you're in the market for buying or selling real estate in San Francisco, you'll want the A-number-one real estate agent. Well, at McGuire Real Estate, the top producer is Robert Merriman, and I encourage you to give him a call at 415-351-4698 or check him out at robertmerriman.com. Robert Merriman is opening doors for buyers and sellers in the city, and his excellent service is never discounted. Whether you're a buyer or seller in San Francisco, you need a creative negotiator on your team. Robert Merriman at McGuire Real Estate is the man for the job. Contact Robert at 415-351-4698. That's 415-351-4698. Or robertmerriman.com. I think most players that come here, they find it pretty easy to blend in. I mean, Hunter Pence was like that when he got here. Even a guy like Justin Maxwell, who I just talked to today, he was saying how great it was easy to fit in. But if you're not producing, and you're on a team that has such high expectations all the time with all these World Series, and you're a guy like Casey McGee, how difficult do you think that is? He's coming back home, he's from Santa Cruz, and it's just been so tough. He seems like he's pressing to me.
Yeah, he's put a lot of pressure on himself. You could see it from the day one. Even that first series of the season in Arizona, he had a big RBI hit, but earlier in that game he had made an out with the bases loaded. And after that game, he was still kind of frustrated that he hadn't come through, even though later on he did get a hit to contribute to a win. And I thought, wow, this guy really is hard on himself. And like you said, he is coming home. That can be tough for players sometimes. You know, and I think he's a guy who, it's almost like he's had to battle through so much in his career, going to Japan, you know, being nearly out of baseball at one point, being the NL Comeback Player of the Year last season with the Marlins. Obviously a huge halo effect batting right behind Giancarlo Stanton in that batting order. But here it's almost like he came to the place where he's always dreamed of being, and he doesn't want to foul it up now. And we know that Bruce Bochy is a very patient manager. He doesn't give up on guys, doesn't quit on guys, especially in May when they have a decent major league track record. And so I think you're going to see Casey McGee get some more opportunities. But at the same time, like you said, it is a game of production. McGee's not hitting sixth. He's hitting eighth now when he is in there. And you do see Matt Duffy in there against lefties a little more often. And so, you know, if this continues into June and getting toward the All-Star break and McGee is still struggling hitting near the Mendoza line, then, you know, I do think you will see him play a little less often.
He replaces Pablo Sandoval, sort of. I mean, I don't know if one player replaces another on a team, but Pablo Sandoval has been thriving in Boston, you know, hitting for a pretty high batting average. Where does he stand as far as his legacy here? I mean, yeah, he's got the three World Series rings, but you know, he made those statements at spring training. Does that really kind of sting with fans? I mean, is it going to stick? It really is my question with fans, the fact that he said, you know, he only missed a couple of people, you know, what, Bruce Bochy and Hunter Pence, and it just didn't seem like a great ending because he was kind of bitter about the way it ended.
Well, and for me, when I read quotes from a player, especially a player where English is their second language, I look at it with a little bit of a jaundiced eye and sort of wonder, is there anything lost in translation here? Did they really mean what they said? Now, he was approached later by Boston reporters and sort of asked to, you know, if he wanted to walk back his comments at all, and he said no, that story, that Bleacher Report story reference came out just fine. I do think that, you know, he's got a lot of pride, he's got some ego, and I think he wanted to leave to become a bigger star, and he knew he could do that maybe in Boston, become the next David Ortiz, maybe the next great visible Latino star. You know, here he'd been a World Series MVP, he's won three World Series, and been an all-star, and still maybe, you know, how can he really raise his profile anymore here in San Francisco? Now, is he thinking selfishly by thinking about raising his own profile versus being in a place where he's beloved already locally, a place where he's won? Maybe you can criticize him for that. Maybe you can't. But for me, I think that the guy's got one career. He's got one life. He wants to have the experience of playing someplace else. So God bless him. Let him do that.
As we finish up, how much do you think it's helped your career that you are diversified? You know, like you mentioned, you're authoring books. You've worked in television with Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area. You've been with the Bay Area News Group. So just working in all these areas, still covering baseball, but just trying to diversify yourself and be multifaceted.
That's an interesting question. I'm not really sure if there's an answer to that. I just think there's so many more ways that people consume news. It used to be very straightforward. You would open up the newspaper. And I think if you don't change with the times a little bit and make sure that you're connecting with people, then it almost doesn't matter, you know, what you're reporting and writing about. If it's not being consumed and being read and being processed and giving people food for thought, you can't give people food for thought if the food doesn't leave the kitchen, I guess,
right.
Would be the bad analogy I would use. So, you know, I just think all of the more you can do that, the better. And it you do get a little, maybe a little foggy-headed sometimes with all the different apps and all the different things out there. And I think, oh, maybe I should Vine this, or maybe I should tout it, or maybe I should Snapchat it, or, you know. But the number one priority always will be to report responsibly, prevent accurate or get out accurate information as timely as you can. You know, and try to just tell people what these players are all about and things about their background. And, you know, you've got the access as a reporter to go where other people can't. And so the more you can sort of bring them into that room, share that clubhouse scene, give them some insight, give them an expectation for what might happen next, the better, no matter what medium it's in.
Andy, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Again, the book, Giant Splash. Look forward to reading it, and everybody should go pick it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And also, Band of Misfits, the book about the 2010 team, also out in paperback as well. So thank you, Joe.
That's Andrew Baggerly from the Bay Area News Group. Want to thank him for joining us. And coming up on Wednesday, we'll have former Giants relief pitcher Tim Worrell. You won't want to miss that. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.